Welcome to the House of Pod, a show where we pull back the curtain on the world of medicine, we answer questions about your health, and we interview great guests.
I'm Joe, and I'm not a doctor.
And I'm Lizzie.
And I'm Kaveh.
And we're two gastroenterologists.
What's a gastroenterologist?
You know, the doctors who work with your digestive system.
Say what?
You know, your liver, your pancreas, your intestines.
What now?
Your butt, Joe. It's your butt.
Oh.
Take a breath. Breathe.
You doubted how long I could do this for, but I'm showing you. Pod.
I feel like we just ate up our entire Zoom meeting time with that intro. It felt like 40 minutes.
For the listener, we have had to shift our natural recording process, as you probably noted, and now we use Zoom, but we're too cheap to buy the real Zoom, so we're still doing like the 40-minute free Zoom, so we have to be mindful of our minutes. You might also notice that's why our episodes are shorter in general. Hi, everyone. Hi, Lizzie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm okay, but this is I'm excited. I don't know if you can tell in my voice, but I'm just happy that you're back because you are
I'm
now
back in San Francisco.
Back from New York. You went to New York. You volunteered at the hospital you trained at. Can you say which one?
I'm going to. Bellevue Hospital. Yeah. Nobody's. That's an interesting question. I've not been told not to do that. So
I don't see any reason. I don't see any reason why not to. But I thought I'd leave it to you. So, anyways, you're back. I'm really glad to talk to you. We have a lot to talk about, and I mean, this is one of those super open-ended questions that you will not be able to answer, but I'm going to ask anyways. How was it?
It was great. No, it was very rewarding. I'm very happy I went. Like, you know, I don't know how much medical care or anything that I provided as a GI doctor, but I think just going there and like bearing witness to what was happening and providing a boost of like energy and silliness was so important. You know, people have been there for weeks and weeks and are going to be there for weeks and weeks taking care of these patients. We're like, thank you so much for coming. And like, they're so sweet because they're getting their asses handed to them, you know, and they don't see necessarily an end in sight. Even if it's peaked, it's still going on, you know?
Yeah.
And they were just so appreciative that they didn't feel alone in the fight, you know? And I don't know. There was just so much gratitude. It was really heartwarming. And, you know, what was also super cool was that all the teams of doctors, like I was on a medicine team of doctors in like this weird kind of ICU team. And my colleagues, my peers, who are probably, by the way, 10 to like 20 years younger than me, one was like an OB-GYN attending, obstetrician attending. One was a pediatrician. And one was like an anesthesiologist. I mean, it was just this weird, crazy potpourri of people who were volunteering and also training there. So sort of voluntold maybe to do it is what somebody told me. But so it was just a really kind of interesting, dynamic, diverse, really energetic group of people that I worked with. So it was pretty inspiring given what was going on there.
So let me ask another sort of basic question.
Yeah.
Is it as bad as we thought it would be, or is it as bad as the stories you've heard?
Everyone had PPE. Everyone had enough protection, I think. I mean, we're still using the same masks every day, but in this time, that is enough, right?
Right. But to be clear, back, you know, ideally, that's not how we were ever trained to use the stuff.
No.
It was not meant to be like reused again. I mean, if you were to go back like a couple months ago, what was considered like taboo is now totally normal procedure.
Right. No. Tyler asked me like, oh, how much?
Your boyfriend.
My boyfriend. About the N95 masks. I was like, oh, you know, I think we're going to, after 4 days, they say you can use a contaminated one again. And, you know, we only have used them for tuberculosis in the past. And he said, well, how long did tuberculosis stay on the mask that you could reuse it? I said, I have no idea because I've never reused a mask before. Yeah. You know, like it's a question that we've not been posed. But given what's happening with PPE conservation and stewardship, you know, being responsible with this equipment, it felt like we did have enough, but it is as crazy as they say, you know. The ICU, the entire 10th floor of Bellevue Hospital, one of the oldest, biggest city hospitals in the country, was filled. Every bed. And you kind of forgot that they had COVID because every single person had COVID. COVID-related complications. So, and that's, you know, in medicine, we always say this is a 82-year-old guy with a history of hypertension, diabetes, blah, 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 blah. You know, and we would almost forget to say the COVID part because every single person had COVID. It was just a given. You know, yeah. And there were two patients per room. Like that doesn't happen in ICUs, you know, in these little rooms.
Wow,
so it's exactly what you're seeing on social media if you're following, you know, legitimate news resources.
Well, that's what I was going to say, actually, because I still think people don't know. And I'll tell you, I've been slamming my head into brick walls recently online trying to convince people who really doubt this. And
I can't believe it. Yeah.
Oh no, it's a real thing. I didn't believe it either, but it's like not, yeah. It's a real thing. People really don't believe it's happening and believe there's some sort of conspiracy of some sort. What purpose? Yeah. I don't entirely understand. I don't know. New World Order, something or other, but like, we have these laws, these HIPAA laws that keep us from like filming patients and showing patients. But there's a part of me that's just like, I think we need to take a film crew into an ICU and let people see what is happening. Let them go into an ER that's busy in New York. Let them see what that's like. You know, I don't know. People who don't believe at this point, they probably just won't believe it. But I feel like that would be needed at this point.
I mean, I have no reason to lie. You know what I mean? Like, I know you trust me, but
I trust you with this. Let's not make it a universal trust statement.
You trust me with the podcast. That's it.
Yeah. I trust your word on this.
Right. It's just, it really, every 1 to 2 hours during the first couple days there, every couple hours, there was an overhead page for what we call a rapid response, which means somebody's not doing well. Or a code, which means somebody needs chest compressions, or an airway, which means an intubation. Every 2 hours, probably every 1 hour.
I know this is true because I called you like every other hour to check in and see how you're doing. And it's in the background the whole time in every phone call. There's people running. There's a code being called in the background. It's crazy. Yeah.
I fortunately was not on the code team, but can you imagine like somebody has COVID and you're doing chest compressions, how much like sputum and spit comes out during those procedures? You know, it's so high risk and people are doing that and they're not pausing. I mean, they're pausing to put gear on their PPE, but they're not second guessing it, you know? And I overheard an intern in the room where we were doing all our work, who I didn't know. And she just said out loud, you know, I'm not scared anymore. You know, like it's just the norm now, you know?
Yeah. And what do you think that's, how are the people they're doing? Are they really not scared? I imagine they must be freaking exhausted.
I think there's just that first barrier, like before you, because I had never donned and doffed. You know, I've seen videos, we've gotten tons of emails about preparing for the surge, but I hadn't done it because I think honestly doing it would require PPE, wasting it, you know? But, I think it's that first hurdle, that first barrier to starting to put the gear on and seeing a patient and realizing it's still just medicine and day-to-day work as usual. People still need your care, need your attention. And there's no family around, like, but, you know, to navigate this whole thing. So it's just you and this patient who often is not awake and alert and talking to you. But I did see an intern who hadn't seen a COVID patient yet, and he seemed terrified, you know, and it's just putting the gear on and going and see patients. And I think once you start doing that, it's your normal. But before you do that, it's the anticipation and that fear that if you haven't done something, anything, your first time you swim, the first time you ski, the first time you do it, anything, it's just terrifying. And then you do it and you survive, you know?
Right. So, you know, the toll this is going to take on the American healthcare providers is going to be immense. It cannot be overstated. And particularly, obviously, in the hotspots, but even outside of the hotspots, places that are feeling, every doctor is feeling the stress one way or another. But those hotspots, obviously, are going to be hit the hardest. We have to figure out something to do now. And I don't know what, I honestly don't, to help prepare for that. because we are going to have burnout like we never had before, on top of what was probably already existing moral injury in a lot of doctors. I mean, I don't know what we're going to do, but it's going to be bad. I mean, I could see a lot of doctors in like a year from now just being like, fuck it, I'm out, I'm done. And they just, they wipe their hands of the whole thing and they walk away. Maybe this will get us the right people in medicine. Maybe people who are still trying to get into medicine right now are doing it for the right reasons. They see the worst case scenario and they still want to do it. And that might be a good thing. But I am worried what's going to happen to these providers.
Yeah. I think that there's so much death, you know, there's so much death happening right now in all the New York City hospitals. And, you know, now I think in New Orleans, and I think I read Detroit. It's every couple hours for sure. And again, maybe it's waning now, but so you say that there's already moral injury, and you know, a lot of the doctors who are dealing with this now, like you're saying, haven't processed it. Like, you know, usually when a patient is intubated and sedated, you might not connect with them, but at least you can talk the family through the dying process. And now they can't come visit. You know, you have to do it on the phone, or there's a lot of FaceTime going on. I really walked around the Bellevue and I would see people FaceTiming with these iPads at the patient's room. And I'd be wondering, isn't that a HIPAA violation? And then I realized it was the social workers going to the bedside one or two times a day, so the family could FaceTime. It was exceptional, like how much extra care there was. So I think the whole processing of all this death and all this like really just sadness, you know, I don't think it's happened yet. So I do think what the worst is, unfortunately for the doctors and the healthcare system, is ahead still of us, you know?
And then
I think people are still going to be terrified to see their doctors and to come into public places and hospitals for months to come. And it's going to be hard to readjust.
It's going
to
be a weird long slog, huh?
But the positive part is it's really inspiring to see these people do this work.
Yeah.
And to have the energy and to have the compassion and the patience to deal with this stuff. People really are working together. There was all these volunteers there. It was really uplifting. And, you know, I went in for 5 days and, you know, everyone's so appreciative. And then there's people who've been there for weeks and will be there for weeks. And, you know, they need that attention. They need like credit and gratitude. And I hope they're getting it. You know, my friends who I talk to, I definitely send them nice messages.
Well, this is a good time for us to do it. I mean, you brought up a great point with the social workers. I mean, those social workers, respiratory therapists, as we talked on the last episode, you know, mailmen who are out on the street, delivery guys, people who are still working through this thing, and particularly people who are like you have volunteered in hotspots to run into the face of danger. I mean, I got a lot of respect for it. I'm really proud of you for doing what you did. I didn't want you to do it, but, you know, I'm really glad that you're back, but I'm really proud of you for doing it. And I'm glad that it worked out okay, and I'm glad you did it. Anyone in particular you want to give a shout out to?
Honestly, there are plastic surgeons in there doing like medicine work. I was just floored. Those guys, I'm like, this isn't where you should be. But the social work, Bellevue, the social workers and the palliative care team would come and seek us out again once or twice a day and like would really offer, do you want us to call any families? We have more time than you. Like, and it was outstanding. Like it was really, you know, things sometimes at Bellevue City County hospitals, maybe VAs move a little bit slower than other hospitals, but and there were some systems issues that were slow, but like the people were just so invested and it was just, that was it. That was the shout outs. I really worked with some great residents too. And I can send them this episode, Priya and Owen and Alex and Nicole, some good people. So
good job, guys. Good job.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So stay tuned. We have one of my favorite comedians coming on next. His name is Johnny Taylor. He's great. We'll have links to his comedy to check out. You really should. Particularly now, more than ever, you need to have some comedy, and this is a great way to do it. And we'll talk about ways to see comedy and still get your entertainment, even in a time of COVID. Follow us if you're not already doing so on Twitter at The House of Pod. We're also on Instagram at The House of Pod. We have a Facebook page as well. If you're on any of those sites, follow us at them. Email us if you have questions or comments, or if you want to say we messed up on something. at HOP questions, HOP questions at gmail.com. If you haven't already, tell your friends about us. This is a good way to get the word out. We don't take any corporate sponsorship or anything like that. So if you have any friends that might be into podcasts, let them know about us.
Take a break from COVID. Listen to the House of Pod. That's a commercial.
Yeah, not always COVID. Stay tuned. On today's show, we have Johnny Taylor. He is a comedian that has shared the stage with some of the biggest names in comedy. Robin Williams, Brian Posehn, Dave Attell, you name it. He's toured across the country. You can usually find him in Northern California, but because of COVID, you're going to find him here on the internet with us. Johnny, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. It's good to be here.
Yeah, man. It's a pleasure to have you on. I mean, we need comedians more than ever. And I have to tell you, I'm going to say this straight up before I let Lizzie get to the first question. I have so much respect for comedians. And I'll tell you why. It's a job that is so weird because if you're doing it well and you're really good at it, it looks like you're not doing much at all. You know, if you're a really good comedian, then people look at you and be like, that guy barely practices or whatever. I mean, he looks like so, doesn't look like he's trying at all. He just comes up there and talks. But I mean, we know it's more than that. That's the first thing. The second thing is, I've been in a band for like most of my life. And when you play in a band and people don't like it, there are so many different reasons you can come up with. You could be like, oh, well, you know, the drummer sucked, or they just weren't into our style of music, or like the sound quality of that place blew, whatever. There's always like a million excuses you can come up with. There's so, it's such a safer way to perform. But when you're a comedian, holy shit, it's just you. You're up there, you and a mic and the audience. It seems so much scarier to me. So I have so much more respect for comedians because of that.
I agree with Kaveh. We're both doctors, in case you didn't know. And I think being a comedian sounds much harder, much more terrifying because it is. It does. I mean, think about it. You are up there alone on the stage. You're essentially like talking your whole life's like traumas out on stage. It's like the audience is your therapist, and like you're put, it's so vulnerable, and like you live and die by like laughter or not laughter, or silence is even worse. I could never do it. I totally am in awe of you guys.
Right. I think it's safe to say in the post COVID world, comedians are the true heroes. not you doctors that are taking care of everybody.
Well, yes. Along those lines, in this time of Corona, as everyone's saying now, or COVID-19, how, you know, I remember 9/11, it was so hard to know when to go back to being silly and funny and making jokes. You know, we remember those times. And like, what do you as a comedian think? What does the comedian community say? Like, when is it time to make jokes about this stuff? Or how do we kind of stay uplifted and positive during these times without humor? You know, it's so important.
Right. I mean, obviously it's a huge bummer, and the news cycle is just 100% sad. Mm-hmm. I don't think you can look at the numbers as they rise in certain places and level off in other places. Those are dead people, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a life count of dead people, and it's a bummer. And it almost feels weird to make jokes because, you know, you're making jokes about Tiger King or whatever else is, you know, the thing that people are doing while they're stuck in their houses. Mostly drink, from what I'm reading on the internet. And it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, it's fun to make memes and make jokes, but at the same time, it's like, man, people are dying. You know, there's bodies piling up. And so it is hard, you know, it's a delicate balance. But the thing is that, you know, they say tragedy plus time equals comedy. And I'm sure at some point down the line, we're going to be able to kind of laugh at the maybe not the crisis itself, but some of the subplots that it created. I think that's the real challenge to it, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah. And there's going to be a lot of material, you know, from the people protesting out in the streets to what our president you know, says on a daily basis in front of the nation. Right. There's going to be so much. I mean, I would say actually, though, even sooner than that, I feel like you're needed. For one, because, you know, even as doctors and even, you know, people who deal with the stuff on a daily basis, we still need some refuge from that. I mean, we need something to entertain us. And more importantly than us, we need the masses to stay home and be entertained at home. That's like, you like anyone, you have, we're going to talk about your records before we close, particularly Tangled Up and Plaid, which is, I really liked. And those people have to have stuff to stay home and listen to. That is the most important thing that we could offer people right now out in the world. And so what you're doing is, and what you've done is, I don't know, it's pretty important.
Yeah. And I mean, I think a lot of, you know, creative types, whether it's comedy or music, we're stuck in our houses and in our rooms, in my case. And it's one of those things where you're just, trying to kick out content to try to keep people engaged with the reality that we're all stuck inside, you know. And I think it's, you know, it's one of those things where, I mean, you follow me on social media, I kick out 50 jokes a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's one of the, you know, it's just, I'm just trying to at least make a ripple of fun in what is a really awful situation. And yeah. I think, and my friends are too, you know, I mean, everybody's trying their best to try to do the right thing for the most part. There's also fucking idiots. Can I swear?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, totally.
You can fucking swear. We don't fucking like it, but you can fucking do it.
Oh, it's a fucking uncalled for. It's fucking uncalled for, Lizzie.
We sat on our show just recently, last week, Dr. Jesse Gold, who's a psychiatrist, who was telling us all about, you know, being tuned in and dialed into all the corona stuff, but really needing some sort of relief from the day, from the news, from the tragedy, you know, and it is, you know, doctors are taking care of patients, but when doctors get home, they really do need comedy. It's like, you know, a great coping mechanism, a great defense mechanism to tune out a little bit. So it is a service, maybe not heroic, but super awesome and part of like an important part of the routine these days. Oh. So
yeah, humor is our favorite defense mechanism. And it's one that we use a lot. And that was one of the reasons we did the show, was like, you know, as doctors, we oftentimes use a lot of sort of very dark humor to help us get through weird stuff. And it helps our day. And I don't think people quite recognize that, like, that's how doctors actually speak. And we thought that was important for people to know that, because, you know, we're humans and we do need the same sort of defense mechanisms that everyone else does. And humor is definitely our favorite. Let me ask you, you kind of have a little personal medical history as well, if you don't mind us going into. You've talked about it a little bit before. I think you're pretty open about it. Can you tell us about your own personal medical history?
I had surgery a few years back. I had perforated diverticulitis. Ever heard of it?
Yeah, once or twice.
Yeah. So I had surgery, and I had let myself, first off, I was misdiagnosed to begin with. Mm. A few months prior to that, they diagnosed me as having a bladder infection. And so they gave me these antibiotics. And you know, as a side note, it helped clear a little bit of the infection from the diverticulitis.
Yeah.
So I felt a little bit better. I felt a little relief. But then it came back and I was just like, oh, this must just be that bladder infection again. And so I'm drinking, you know, cranberry juice and stuff. And then finally, like one night, I had just done a show and I got home and I had a real bad fever and I was like dry heaving and excruciating pain, obviously. And told the girl I was dating at the time, I was like, I think I have to go to the hospital. I don't know what's going on. And so got in there. They gave me an MRI and the doctor came in. He was like, well, I got good news and bad news. And I was like, okay, well, give it to me. And he's like, the good news is you don't have cancer. But the bad news is that we have to operate on you today, or this is going to be a bad thing. So cut out some of my intestines, and luckily I didn't have a colostomy bag, and recovered in about 2 weeks, and I was headlining the Sacramento Punchline in like 2 weeks. So
wow, strong work.
See, that doctor has a good sense of humor. Like, you could have been like, you don't have cancer, but you do have, you know, like, you can say anything after that, really.
Right.
So for our listeners, diverticulitis is, I mean, Kaveh and I know we see it all the time. But if you don't know, there are these pockets in the colon that we call diverticulosis. And the analogy really is like potholes. It's really from wear and tear. And you get these little divots. They're, you know, blind pouches in your colon. They don't go through. It's just contained inside. And when it gets inflamed or infected, then you get intense severe pain and usually a fever like what you had. And that's diverticulitis. It's like appendicitis, but in an unpredictable location. And we can usually treat it with antibiotics, but you do have to diagnose it. Otherwise, it becomes, what you said, complicated by, for example, a perforation, which is a tear in the colon, which is an emergency surgery, which it sounds like exactly happened to you.
Yep.
Or sometimes people get abscesses and they need to be drained. But yeah, surgery and a bag is like the most extreme version. So that must have been awful.
Well, I'm glad
luckily I avoided the colostomy bag. But he told me going in, he was like, I will tell you that there's a chance that we're not going to be able to make this nice. And then,
yeah.
But they were, thank God. So it took.
Did you, two questions about that experience for you. One, did you actually like it when the doctor approached it like that? Like when he said, okay, let me get the worst case scenario out. It's not cancer. And then he said it was diverticulitis. Did you actually like that? Were you kind of like, don't be a smart ass? How was your response to that?
I liked it for sure. At that point, I just, the fact that he sounded so unconcerned about it made me less concerned about it. He was like, we're going to do it. You're going to be fine. And, you know, and he was very like, he's a cool dude. I liked him. One of the first things he said is, I'm one of the best in the country at this surgery.
Nice.
Confidence. And,
yeah.
And I Googled it though. I was like, let's see.
Yeah.
He was great. So
Let me ask you, from the experience prior to that where you were like misdiagnosed, has that affected your ability to like put faith in doctors or in the outpatient doctor world? Has that affected it?
No, it hasn't. I mean, it's a bummer. I probably could have avoided, major surgery, maybe, or maybe I would have had to have it anyways. You know, I don't know.
Right.
Maybe it was already bad back then. I don't really know. But for the most part, I've had good experiences with doctors. I haven't had that many bad experiences. So, faith shaken, but not completely distinguished.
Well, it sounds like you have a good attitude because you can easily, twist that into something really bad. And we have patients who, if I say you don't have cancer, I think you have this, that doesn't reassure them. They actually get pissed off because they're like, what I have is serious. And you using that like comparison makes me feel unheard, So it really is, this is like the art of medicine, is developing rapport and understanding which patients can handle. Because that, the way he phrased it to you is sort of a joke. Like, you need emergency surgery and you almost had a bag outside your colon. Like, that's terrifying.
It could have been funnier though. He could have been like, I have like good news and bad news. And he could be like, you have a perforated diverticulitis. And you'd be like, what's the good news? And he'd be like, I just saved a bundle of money at Geico and like fucking walked out.
Right.
He could have done. He could have done more with it, and that's a bit hacky. But he could have done more, is what I'm trying to say.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Obviously, he's a doctor for a reason, but
he knew
I was a comedian. He knew my history a little bit.
Oh.
So I think he felt like he could kind of joke around.
That's good. So again, my impression is comedians are up there on a stage, like pouring their heart out about their sex life and their family life and their work life and all this stuff. So again, I think of it as like really having therapy sessions, So again, for me, that translates into, I think a lot of comedians probably have a lot of depression, anxiety, possible higher rates of suicide. Is this something that you've witnessed in your life from your peers or yourself even, or can you speak to that at all?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've lost some friends to suicide that were comedians. We are wired a little bit differently than the rest of the world. You know, it's, I always explain it as having, a very narcissistic nature of being like, I want validation from strangers, but also crippling insecurity. So it's the combination of those like two worlds And, you know, oftentimes that stage, that rush that you get from being on the stage and performing and killing, or whatever the comedian does, you know, you get that feedback response and it's so powerful and it's exhilarating and your adrenaline's rushing. And then, you know, you get home to like an empty apartment, your cat, and you're like, you know, I can't maintain that rush the right. whole time. And so, I mean, I think that's why a lot of comedians have problems with substance abuse, you know, drugs and alcohol, is because you're just trying to recreate those good feelings that you get from performing. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, comedy can be a dark profession. You know, luckily for me, I'm pretty stable these days, but, you know, some days are better than others for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel like comedians are less likely or more likely than the general population to seek out help if they do have a problem like that?
I would say way less likely.
Why is that, you think? Is this like they would feel like they should be dealing with it? They don't want people to know? What's the reason?
Yeah, I think there might be a degree of shame in it, you know? Also, I think there's this weird idea that if I get better, I'm not going to be funny anymore.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right. If I'm not pulling from this this dark place, you know, let's say I go get the right medication, I go see a therapist and everything's hunky-dory, am I going to be able to turn this sad stuff and this other, you know, these other thoughts into art, you know?
Yeah, you hear that a lot about musicians. You know, I think I read that about Sting. Like, he thought he needed the drama, like the heartache and the drugs and stuff to create. And, you know, I hope that's not true, but because youth is part of that too. I also would guess that a lot of comedians, just like musicians, probably don't have great healthcare coverage. You know what I mean? Like, it's just part of being young and being in a really unsupported field of work, I think.
Right. I think that's very true. And I think it, you know, honestly, I think it keeps comedians hanging on to their day jobs a little longer than they might want to, because they might have a little bit of benefits there. So,
yeah.
Yeah, right. So, you know, right now, the whole world of comedy is I'm sure, trying to find different venues of getting the material out there. What are you doing now? How are you trying to work around this right now?
Well, I've been doing a weekly Zoom show on Friday nights at 8:30 p.m. And it's with Keith Lowell Jensen. It's called The Three Way. And me and Keith do some time up front, and then we have a comedian friend do some time, and then we do like a Q&A. It usually lasts about 45 minutes. So that's been cool. I've been doing a lot of Zoom comedy shows, and I got to tell you, it's weird. It's not, it is not the same.
Do you sit there with like an automated like laugh track just to like keep you going?
No, we've been unmuting like a handful of mics. So there is like some feedback. You get some laughter. But also like you hear some kid's toddler like screaming at him like, "Dad, pay attention to me." So I mean, it comes with a whole bunch of other like weird stuff. But I wouldn't say it's stand-up. It's comedy to a webcam. And I never thought I'd use my webcam in that way, to be honest. Way less fun than how I used to use my webcam. it's one of those things where it's like, this is what we're doing for now. It's fun enough.
Another
month probably.
At least.
Yeah.
So there's the weekly Zoom, every Friday 8:30. By the way, Keith Lowell Jensen's really funny too. So that must be a super fun show to catch. How do people find it?
Follow me on Facebook or Twitter. I'm at Hipsterocracy on Twitter, and I post about it every week. And it's a pay what you can, but anybody can come. And you know,
oh, that's really cool.
We're trying to make some ends because I mean I had 3 months of gigs canceled, so
yeah.
That took a huge chunk of my promised income away from me. That Trump's $1,200 check isn't seeming to cover, but so we are taking donations, but it is pay what you can. We're not trying to fleece anybody, but if you got some extra shekels, send them our way.
Oh yeah, definitely. And so that's at Hipsterocracy. And what about some of your, you have some albums that people could listen to online, right?
Yeah, I got two albums. My first one was Tangled Up in Plaid. Thanks for the kind words. I'm proud of that one. That was my first album that came out in 2014. And then I have one called Bombing with the Devil that came out in 2018. And they're both available on Spotify and Apple Music and anywhere you can listen to stuff. And Bumming with the Devil is a video special that you can also watch on Vimeo. If you just type in Vimeo, Johnny Taylor Comedy, it'll come right up.
I've seen them. I've heard them. They're really funny. Dude, you're a really funny comedian. And I'm looking forward to catching some of these Friday night Zooms, having something to look forward to on my Friday nights.
Yeah, cool, man. Come on in.
Yeah. All right, man.
Thank you so much.
Don't invite Lizzie. She's the one that's going to have her. Her mic's going to be on the whole time. It's going to be like her and her boyfriend talking in the background. She'll go to the bathroom and like you'll hear her like farting and shitting and it'll be awful. That's her.
Today I did take my brother into the bathroom while we FaceTimed and I told him I was doing it. I was like, just look. Everything was good. It was super awkward for everyone. I was like... I thought it was funny. He really hated every second of it.
I can imagine.
So did my boyfriend.
Hey, Johnny, thank you so much, man. Look forward to hearing your internet stuff and watching you live again sometime in the near future.
And thanks so much. I appreciate what you guys are doing. Like, you guys are the real heroes. Thanks for everything.
Thank you.
But don't undersell what you've done and your accomplishments. Undersell who you are.
I'm a great person. Just an unnecessary doctor.
That's our soundbite for the end. The blooper.
The opinions on this podcast are broadcasted for educational and informational purposes only and do not represent the opinions of our employers. These opinions are not intended as a diagnosis, treatment, or as a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please consult a local physician or other healthcare professional for your specific healthcare and/or medical needs or concerns. Mm-hmm.